Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
I was in Atlanta when they got 2 inches of snow and shut the whole city down. And I was running around the airport acting like an asshole, man. Y'all don't know what cold is, smacking people. Like, why you smack me? That's what Chicago wind feels like, bitch. Touche. Touche, sir. But I met this one lady, man. She must have been her last day, or she just don't give a fuck. I walked up to her, man, and I promise you I was being cool. I was like, hey, we've been waiting here about 5 hours. Do you have any kind of updates, anything you could possibly tell us? If you don't, it's cool. I know it's real hectic, you know, people getting on your nerves. She doesn't answer me at all. She jumped right on the intercom. Thank you for choosing Delta Airlines. This is Tanya. Now, I know some of y'all got questions. I got questions too. But right now, we ain't boarding the plane because we can't find the captain. I don't know. I don't see him, so I don't know. So if you got any other questions, I'm gonna need you to be like Superman, lift in a Mustang and hold your horses. Thank you. I don't know why everybody's so mad about these 2 inches shutting the whole city down, because I shut down every time I see 2 inches. You hear me, girls? We are Facebook friends now, because that was gangster. She ended with a solid closer. She breathed on the intercom at her job. You can't do that. She's the Trump of Delta, and I loved it.
That was Chris Redd from his album, But Here We Are, which is out on all streaming services right now. Welcome to Stand Up with Chris DiStefano.
Hello, I'm
Chris DiStefano. With me, my co-host Nicole Boyce, a.k.a. Nicole, no last name.
Yes.
Even though I just said your last name.
Why? Well, that's not,
but,
yeah. I don't
but we're
it.
Just going to get
Whatever
the fans.
You say.
We're just going to get the fans to just, your name's going to be Nicole, no last name.
Yeah.
I don't
Let's
know why.
Let's get it trending.
I just like it. And if it doesn't work and if it doesn't catch on in 5 episodes, I'm just going to give you another nickname. Nicole, it's not
going
to stop.
We'll keep going until...
Just so you understand,
that's
what it is.
Me.
That's what it is on this podcast. We give people nicknames. That's an important part of the podcast. The most important part of the podcast is we talk about stand-up.
Yes.
All day, every day.
And we listen to stand-up.
And we listen to stand-up, and we talk about insider stand-up. We talk about general public knowledge stand-up. I got a lot of behind-the-scenes shit about stand-up. We're going to play clips from anybody who's ever done stand-up on Comedy Central ever, which is pretty much any comedian you've ever heard of.
Yes.
There's not a comedian you haven't heard of that hasn't done stand-up on Comedy Central. If they haven't done stand-up on Comedy Central, you've probs McGobs never heard of them,
yep,
and that's okay.
That's why no one's ever heard of me.
They just haven't been chosen yet. No, people have heard of you now. They're not going to know where to find you because I will not say your last
not
name.
Not say my name.
I've said it once on episode 2, and our diehard fans
I'll bleep it out.
Are going to know that there is one time in 20 years from now, and this is when we're like dead from like drug
20
over,
years?
20 years ago.
I'm 24.
Nicole.
I can't be dead.
Let me tell you what's going to happen.
Oh,
let me tell you what's going to happen.
Okay.
This podcast is going to get so huge that we're going to be selling out arenas in a couple of years, and then we're just going to be so high.
Strung out on drugs.
One day I'm going to suggest me and you go do whippets and jump out of an airplane with
and
no parachute,
I'll
and we're
going to
die. And you're going to say yes because we think we're fucking invincible.
Because we're doing it for stand-up.
But we're going to go down in history, and then our true fans will know that trivia question, what's the one and only time Chris DiStefano said Nicole's last name, and it's going to be the opening intro of the second episode. And that's just what it is, okay? And we, I'm you know, so that's what it is here.
looking forward to our future together.
I'm looking forward to it too. We should adopt a fucking cat. Should we have like a podcast animal? Let's get
a mascot.
We got to have a mascot. So somebody podcasting. we got to bring in a stuffed animal. Maybe I'll get one of my daughter's stuffed animals she doesn't want anymore.
Okay.
And that'll be our podcast stuffed animal. We're just going to leave it in here.
I'm a lesbian, like 5 cats follow me wherever I go.
Absolutely.
So we can just grab one.
Bring
of
in
those.
One of your lesbian cats.
There we go. Okay.
That first of all, Chris yes. Redd from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. He's crushing it.
Cute kid. He recorded that album, But Here We Are, at Comedy Club on State in
Madison, Wisconsin, yeah.
which is the capital. I love capital. I'm Chrissy State Capitals.
What's the capital? Texas.
Austin.
That's an easy
Nicole,
one.
Listen, if you're going to ask me once, are you new here? What the fuck is happening? I know. Why did you do that? Why did you ask me the easiest one?
I can't think of a city. Colorado.
Denver. Nicole, get out.
I almost said Denver. What's the capital of Denver?
No, Nicole.
Florida?
Tallahassee. Okay. Just stop.
What's your favorite comic from Florida?
My favorite comic from Florida? Good call. Good question. Either Brian Regan, I believe he's from Florida.
Oh. Okay.
Mike Lawrence is from Florida. I like Mike.
Those are pretty good.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's somebody I'm forgetting. Oh, Kevin Barnett. He was from Florida.
Okay.
KB. Yeah. RIP KB.
Yeah.
He was from Florida. But comedy club.
Yes.
Comedy club on State in Madison, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
So there's pretty much. Every comedy club is great, and I really mean that. There are good comedy clubs, you know who you are. The bad comedy clubs, you know who you are because, you know, nobody's performing there.
Yeah.
So, but the good clubs, it's like, you know, but comedy club on State is like amongst comics, like in the top 5 of best clubs in the country. So the top 5 in any different order from comedians' points of view. I'm not talking about theaters or anything. I'm just talking about traditional comedy clubs you'll have. And again,
touring
no
comics.
Particular order.
Okay.
Comedy Club on State, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Denver Comedy Works.
Yeah.
In Denver, Colorado, which is the capital.
Which is the capital of Colorado.
Gotham Comedy Club in Manhattan, which is not the capital of New York. The capital is Albany.
I'm learning so much today.
But Gotham Comedy Club is 3. Acme Comedy Club in Minneapolis is, and the last one is the DC Improv. Those are the 5 that pretty much everybody's like, we love these rooms. You can't fail there.
Yeah.
They have everything perfect. So what's perfect about a comedy club to a comedian's point of view, from a comedian's point of view, is number one, low ceilings. That's like one of the most important parts.
Why?
Because the higher the ceiling, the more the laughs kind of disperse in the air and they don't get trapped. They don't, with a low ceiling,
okay.
Like Denver Comedy Works, like Gary Goldman has to sit in a chair. Like that's how low the ceilings are. So that's.
And he's only 5 feet tall.
So that's
so
why.
So it has low ceilings.
Low ceilings, number one.
Okay.
Two, pretty much the audience, every seat, every chair.
Yeah.
Or table is facing the stage. There's not a bad seat. There's nobody behind you.
Okay.
There's nobody elevated. They're all on your plane.
Okay.
You're on the stage and you're a couple of feet higher than them, but they're all pointed directly at you. And two, good lighting and a good sound. Three, good lighting and a good sound system. So if those clubs have all that, because here's the thing. Here's the truth of this situation, okay?
Let's get into the truth.
For a long time, I started headlining in 2014. And I was pretty much, you know, I had fans. I definitely, you know, but it was getting better, but it wasn't, it never sold out. It was not, it was like, and there were good shows and I was happy to be there, but I'm going to be honest, I was Chrissy Flyers. And what I mean by that is like people were getting flyers or Chrissy
flyers
emails
guy.
Where it's like flyers, the club is flyering, is handing out flyers for their business. Mm-hmm. They're sending emails for their business. And it's just like somebody's just showing up to the club. They don't know who the comedian necessarily is, but they're just there for a good time on a Friday, Saturday night.
Yeah.
So that's a different dynamic than what's going on with me now, since my special size 38 waist came out on Comedy Central the last 4 weekends that I've had. DC Draft House, Philly Punchline, Denver Comedy Works, and Gotham Comedy Club all sold out.
That's great. Congrats, Chris.
That's
so exciting.
Thank you. No, it's because of you guys.
This podcast is going to triple your numbers.
100%.
1,000%.
100%. And again, it's not slammed out. It's not slammed for me like Thursday to Sunday, sold out before I even get there. But the fact that they're even coming and it's I'm selling out and I'm getting these bonuses is just like a new thing for me. And what I realized was it's like the comedy clubs that like do it right, like when you're performing for your fans, it really makes a difference. Because even the rooms that I mentioned that are so good, if they're half empty, then like it doesn't matter how good the lighting is. It doesn't matter how good the sound system is. It doesn't matter if there's low ceilings. You just don't want to be there as a comedian because you take it personal. It's hard not to take it personal when you're going there to a city and there's 10 people there. It's just like, and you've done your job in the promotion. It's really hard to not take it personal because it just means like people don't care. Because
you feed up the audience so much.
Of course. Of course. It's the biggest part. Oh, and you know what's another good thing about those clubs I mentioned? For the most part, they all have, like Comedy Club on State in Madison, they're sold out no matter who's on the bill. So that's great.
Oh, they're just like favorites of the community.
Madison, Wisconsin, just for whatever reason, they just love coming to comedy shows. Like
that's
they just
cool.
love it. So those clubs are great, and that's where Chris Redd performed his album, Here We Are. And that's why I mentioned it. So
we do a lot of the Comedy Central Records albums we record there because it is at
Comedy Club on State.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Because it is so so good for
and it's
albums.
It's owned by a Greek family. It's great.
That's
so
really cool.
What did you do? Did you do any spots this weekend? What'd you do?
No, I
any
did
shows?
A lot of writing this weekend.
Well, that's fine.
I didn't do any.
Well,
spots.
What do you want to do? Do you want to do writing or do you want to do stand up? What's your goal?
I do a lot of writing.
Okay.
Because I like to get those credits because those are helpful to me, like starting out young. So it's good to have to be able to say like I've been published in these places or whatever. That's my MO now. I don't know if you have other advice for me.
No. Well, I think you can use stand up if you don't want to be a professional stand up. I think you can use stand up like in so many other ways. Like a good way to test your writing is to
go try
stand
it
up, read it. Yeah, if it's getting laughs when you're reading, it's going to get if it's getting laughs, like if you're just reading it.
Yeah.
Two people in a comedy club, it's going to get laughs when people are reading it in a magazine or it's 100%.
Is it vice versa? Does vice versa work?
What do you mean?
Like if someone laughed like reading something, do you think that would still crush in live? I don't think so. The
I don't
same
know.
Way.
Well, it all stand up. You know what really? Do you want me to be 100% crystal clear, fucking brutally honest with you?
Stand up with Chris Stefano.
Let me be
honest.
Let me be crystal clear right now.
Yeah.
And some comedians who are strictly joke writers are not going to agree, but I'm Nicole, people won't agree with me, but I am like 100%. When it comes to stand-up comedy, far and away, the number one thing, I'm talking about not a little bit more, so much more than being a good joke writer.
Yeah.
By the way, being a good joke writer is insanely important.
Yeah.
But like, I can't explain to you how much more important it is than being a good joke writer is to be likable. Your likability, the comedians who are fantastic joke writers who have absolutely zero likability on stage are just not going to make it in stand-up. The crowd doesn't care. After 55 minutes of hearing your great jokes that are tweets with no character behind them, people are like, why did I could have just read this.
They need
But the comedians who come out and are all, who are unbelievable joke writers plus stage presence and extreme likability, then you start to have people like Kevin Hart, you know, Dave Attell. These people start to blow up and they start to be Jim Gaffigan because the likability.
Because they're likable.
Because they got both things. So I feel like sometimes I'm talking to my comedian, you know, some comedians, I'm like, oh, you know, so-and-so, amongst comedians, like, how come so-and-so doesn't get more? Why do you think so-and-so didn't get this? Or why is so-and-so doing comedy 25 years and they're still doing, you know, the Des Moines Funny Bone, which is a fine club. But it's like, you know, if you're doing 25 years, you want to be onto theater and stuff.
Sure,
and it's like, well, I mean, to me, it's always been, it's like, well, they're great joke writers, but they have no likability. Why am I paying to see you?
Right.
I want to see you. Like, or else I could just read your shit.
Right.
But you have my point.
Yeah.
The reason why I bring it up is because you have a lot of likability. So don't just be a fucking stupid writer.
Okay.
No,
work on my.
No.
I'm trying to win you over
get
right
out
now.
There. You've won me over.
Okay.
Get on. I'm telling you. Get on stage.
Well, then I'm all set.
Get on stage.
I'm
going
to go right now.
Write those jokes and then get on and perform them.
Okay.
All right. We're going to do it.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. We've been talking about stand up. Let's get into
the stand up. Yes. Who's ready? Who's wet for stand up? I am.
Me.
I'm soaked. I got to put on my seatbelt.
Crowd, just thousands of people raise their hands.
Raise their hands. I'm going to slip off of my seat. Who do you want to go? Who are we going next?
We got two stand up clips coming.
We're going
up.
Back to back?
Yeah. We're going
holy shit. Double penetration.
Back to back.
I love
that
it.
That is the professional term.
Yes.
Christella Alonso.
Love
we
her.
Got a track from her. And then Dave Attell.
What?
I picked Dave Attell just
for you, Chris. Okay, so we'll talk about these after. Listen to Cristela Alonzo and Dave Attell.
So I'm in my 30s, and I've only had one boyfriend in my life. And I think it's weird, too, because I'm obviously so pretty. But I think that's my mom. Mija, no. No. I also have to tell you that I have a thing for Jewish guys. I love Jewish guys. Like, you know how guys get excited when they see, like, hey.
Where did you first get this fetish from?
It's because I grew up in South Texas, and I grew up with Mexicans. So then when I moved to New York, I thought Jewish guys were so exotic that I was like, oh, my God. I like, yeah. So I was doing an open mic, and I met this guy. And he was a stand-up comic, too. He still is. And we started talking, and he was really nerdy, like, pale, black glasses, you know? And I was like, yes, this guy. And 30 minutes into the conversation, he tells me he's Jewish. And in my, like, I'm like, oh, that's cool. But in my mind, I'm like, love it, right? I'm like, oh, I'm on board, right? He's a Jewish guy in Dallas. It was like a unicorn. And we ended up going out on a date, and he tells me on the date that he is a part-time cop. And I have a fear of cops because they tend to be not nice to me in my life. So we went out on our first date, and we ended up hitting it off. We start dating. We're like maybe a month into dating, right? And we decide that we're going to have a romantic trip to New York. We're going to go on Thanksgiving, right? And we're so excited, and I'm like loving it. And the moment we start planning the trip, he becomes Clark Griswold from National Lampoon. It's like, he gets really anal. He's like, all right, we're going to go traveling. That's my Jewish accent. And he's like, we're going to go traveling, and we need to make it easy for security, so don't wear any belts to set off the metal detector. Don't put on any shoes with laces. Like, save time. Liquids, gels, 3 ounces, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I've flown before. Thank you. So then we go. And we get in line at the security line, right? And this guy, he's just like, hey, remember, man, like, if you're wearing a belt, take off your belt. I'm like, I get this, okay? I'm not wearing a belt. Good. We get in the security line. I go through, no problem, right? He gets in the other line, and he walks through. And then all of a sudden, it's like, his bag, right? So I'm like, whoa, whoa. Something with the bag. We got to look inside the bag, right? Looks inside the bag. This old white guy that works at TSA is like, whoa, we gotta shut security down. Shut security down. They send 200 people away to another security gate. We don't know why, right? This guy, the old white guy, starts swabbing the bag, right? And it comes back positive for explosives. Then I hear the old white guy say, whoa, Nelly. Guy looks at the bottom of the bag and takes out a 40 caliber Glock. I start thinking, oh my God, this is not fucking happening. They get the gun. They put me against the wall. They pad me down. Mind you, my white boyfriend isn't getting any of this shit. They're like, oh, you brought the gun? Brown girl, come here. I'm like, oh, all right. This is weird, all right. So after that, they have to call the police department that he was a cop at to make sure he wasn't lying. They verify, hey, he's a real cop, right? They let us go. I go to the plane and I think, fuck this guy. If I never see him again, I'm going to New York by myself, right? He sits next to me, and the entire time we're just sitting like this. I'm looking outside the window. He looks like this. He's looking at me. An hour into the flight, I finally look at him and say, well, at least the fucking belt didn't set off the fucking metal detector.
So I travel a lot. I hate traveling, I guess because my dad used to beat me with a globe. Stay with me. Some things are the same wherever you go. Like if it feels like more than two fingers, it's probably a dick. The jury's out. The crowd is divided on that one. I was in Dayton, Ohio. You ever been there? Yeah? You know what's a fun thing to do there? Pack up and get the fuck out of there. It's boring. During the day, we played the game of horseshoes. Have you ever played that game? Yeah. That must have been invented before fun, because it's not. There's only two ways for that game to end. Either this sucks, let's do something else, or ow, you hit me with the horseshoe. You ruined my night vision. Here's a travel tip. Never, ever pack when you're high. You get there, you open your bag, nothing matches. For the whole trip, all you have to wear is a Hawaiian shirt, an oven mitt, and a lava lamp. That's all you got. The rest of the bag is full of cookie dough and Hot Wheels trucks. And for some reason, an anal thermometer. I didn't even know they still made those. You know, they got a luggage store in the airport, a place to buy a piece of luggage. How late do you have to be for a flight? Well, you're like, fuck it, just grab a pile of shit. We'll get a bag at the airport. Put on a few layers and we'll figure it out at the airport. And bring a poncho.
There you have it. You just heard two back-to-back clips, one from Cristela Alonso, her bit about flying with a Jewish boyfriend, her story about flying with a Jewish boyfriend from the Comedy Central show, This Is Not Happening. And then you just heard Dave Attell from Skanks for the Memories, his bit about travel.
I mean, classic.
Classic. I mean, I'll talk about Attell first.
Yeah.
First of all, that album, Skanks for the Memories, I know every word. Like, I've listened to Skanks for the Memories.
Yeah.
Maybe 100 times. It's every comedian. Dave Attell is every comedian's favorite comedian. Or for the most part, he's a comics comic.
Comic.
They love, comics, you know, when you talk about Dave Attell, you talk about Stephen Wright, Colin Quinn. These guys are the comics. Doug Stanhope. I mean, people. Yeah. These are the comics. It's like the general public. Of course, everybody knows who Attell is, but it's like they may not be, you know, as famous as the other guys, but like comedians. Right. Here's how you know.
Yeah.
Here's another insider tip.
Yeah.
Here's how you know as a comedian, if you're respected by your peers, if you're headlining at Gotham or Caroline's, and on that Sunday show, usually do one show Sunday at 7 o'clock. That Sunday show, if the comedians show up. To watch you, that's how you know. Like when Doug Stanhope was at Caroline's, this was maybe 6 years ago, he's headlining the Sunday show. Like I saw in the back, Attell was there, Artie Lang was there, Colin Quinn was there, Todd Barry was there, Keith Robinson. So like everybody came because it's like it's Stanhope. Everybody loves Stanhope. And the show wasn't sold out. I mean, he sold a lot of tickets, but like the Sunday show wasn't sold out. It was just his main fans. For the most part, as comedians, we know Thursdays and Sundays is when the real true comedy fans will come because they know Thursdays and Sundays you're most likely going to get the best performance from the comedian because Thursday you're just getting there, you're trying out your new shit, all the little quirks about the room, you're just fitting in. And then Sunday, you're happy because you're going home the next day. So you're going to be the best version of yourself Thursdays and Sundays.
Okay.
Where Friday and Saturday, typically the shows are usually sold out or have a lot of tickets sold for anybody.
Yeah.
So you got to do that kind of general set sometimes.
Right. The crowd's different too then probably Friday, Saturday?
So here's here's another. I mean, it's just, it's fucking, I'm Chrissy Quotes today.
Yeah.
So the Friday night, typically, the Friday night late show.
Yeah.
So the Friday night 9 or 10 o'clock, whenever it starts, that second show on a Friday is typically the hardest show of the week. Think about the person who's at a Friday night late comedy show.
Okay.
He or she is most likely, or they, have been most likely working all day.
Sure.
Right? All day.
Yeah. Okay. They've
went out right after work because most likely if you go home after a Friday night, after a Friday work shift, you're not coming back out for a 10 o'clock comedy show.
You're not going back out. You're staying home.
You're staying home. So the only reason why you are at the show is because you've been out drinking. right? Okay. That's not a sober decision to come to the Friday night late show. You'd rather be at the Friday early show or the Saturday night late show. So usually the Friday night late show is for people that wanted to drink and have an after work function and have fun and went to dinner and are boozed up and they're walking in at 9:30, 9:45. That's when the show starts. Or they couldn't get tickets for any other show because they were sold out, and that's not really the show they want to be at, so they're in a bad mood. So typically, you'll have a crowd that's either drunk or pissed.
Okay.
And by the time the headliner gets up, an hour, 45 minutes into the show, so it's already late for a Friday if you've been up since 6 a.m.
Right.
First 25 minutes, you're dealing with the crowd drinking a little bit more, potentially heckling. Maybe you have them. Maybe you get them.
Sure.
But comedy clubs, what they do is it's a business. So they have to drop checks. When the comedy clubs drop the checks in the crowd, it divides the audience. Because now...
Check spot.
Things aren't so funny anymore. Now you realize it's $100. Now you realize it was $12 a beer.
Yeah, five drink minimum.
Yeah. And mozzarella sticks that they got from, you know, the supermarket, they just charge you 15 bucks for that. To have frozen mozzarella sticks and cold marinara. Now shit just got real.
Yeah.
So you're dividing the bill with your table.
Right.
So you're not paying it. The comedian now most likely it's so hard to keep the crowd's attention, especially in a Friday Night Late Show where people are already drunk and tired. Now they're just not going to listen. Because a musician, you can zone in and out in music. You can zone in and out. Yes. It's okay. You want to feel the vibe. Comedian, you missed one word of our set, of our joke, you're going to miss the punchline. You're going to miss the joke.
It's the likability thing because it's all about them. You're on the train with them. You're following where they go. Yeah.
So that's why now when the check spot comes for me, especially on the Friday Night Late Show, I'm doing crowd work. I'm in the crowd trying to keep individuals' attention
because
they're not going to listen to my jokes, especially if it's like a newer joke and it's not that well thought out yet.
Sure.
It's like I'm going to have no choice but to go into the crowd.
So you keep them on their toes.
Keep them on their toes.
Okay.
So that's why...
A little tip.
But a guy like Dave Attell...
Yeah.
Skanks for the Memories, Denver Comedy Works, like that. And that's another good thing about comedy clubs that I mentioned. Like a place like Denver Comedy Works, they don't even... They drop the checks after the shows. Like they clubs that don't have check spots are like, we love you because you're giving the comedian a fair chance to get his or her jokes across with the audience listening.
And Skanks for the Memories was recorded at Denver Comedy Works.
So, and Dave Attell's like, boom, 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 hit, hit, hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what we heard before that, Cristela Alonso on This Is Not Happening. By the way, Cristela Alonso's fucking home run comedian. I mean, she got a sitcom picked up on ABC. That's like, you don't understand how hard that is to get a fucking sitcom on a network. I mean, it's like impossible.
I've been trying.
I mean,
for 24 years.
Listen to me. I had the experience. I had a pilot, filmed it, everything. It didn't get picked up. Now you can find that script in a toilet in Burbank, California. But
hey, that's where I'm from.
Whoa, there we go.
I'm going to go look for it.
Find Nicole's last name and my script, both in toilets in fucking Burbank. Both on the toilet. It was one of those things where it's like, I'm happy I did it.
Yeah.
I'm happy I did it. But I mean, it's just like, it was too much. It was so much. It's so like, I don't think that's what America wants anymore, this shiny fucking sitcom. You know what they want? You know what they want?
What do they want?
They want my cartoon on Comedy Central. That's what they want. I have a cartoon. I'm going to pull a Hannibal right now. My cartoon on Comedy Central just got picked up. Woo!
Every episode is us just
every
wishing
episode,
for something.
10 seasons.
Also,
pull a Hannibal.
A $1 raise for Nicole. Thank you.
$1 raise for Nicole. But I want to just real quickly, I just want to say, because Cristela told a great story about flying with her Jewish boyfriend.
This Is Not Happening, a storyteller show.
On This Is Not Happening, which is a storytelling show. So I've seen Cristela perform many times and she fucking crushes because she's got a lot of like punchline.
Yeah.
Storytelling's a totally different art form.
Yeah.
And she was great at it because she was able to tell the story, draw us in, be interesting.
Right.
Like at times where she would have hit a punchline in her regular stand-up set, she was just being interesting and drawing us in because she had to for the story because it's a storytelling show.
Right.
The audience, when they're told, hey, this is a storytelling show, the whole dynamic of the crowd changes and they'll allow longer pauses without being disinterested before a laugh.
Yeah.
If you just start telling stories up there at a comedy club, the crowd's going to be like, wait, I want to laugh every 10 seconds.
Right.
So Cristela, so that's why that story is able to work so well. oh, no, this is not happening because the crowd knows. And Cristela, I think, is even more of a beast with it because she still didn't go that long without getting laughs. There was a laugh every 20 seconds instead of 10.
Right.
So it's good. But
do you like storytelling? What are your thoughts, storytelling versus like punchline?
Storytelling versus punch.
Or for different scenarios, I guess.
I guess, yeah. Well, I think organically, I veer towards storytelling.
Yeah.
But I'm aware that there needs to be punchlines in there.
Sure.
But it's also like you have to be careful. Like, for example, on my special, Size 38 Waist on Comedy Central, go to cc.com and it's on demand on the app. I told this story about getting into a fight in high school. When I was a senior in high school, I broke a chair over somebody's head. And then my dad I got thrown out of school. And then my dad threatened to kill the principal the next day if he didn't put me back in school. And all that sort, it's like a whole 5-minute bit on my special. Mm-hmm. And it's the truth of it is, it's because when I do that in a comic club, when I did it at the venue where we filmed my special at, I leave a lot of parts out. Like the truth story is that happened on 9/11. So on 9/11, when the second plane hit the second tower, they told us like, hey, there's a terrorist attack. It was an old boy in high school. They were like, there's a terrorist attack going on right now. I could see it from my high school. We faced downtown.
Shit.
So we could see it. And I knew my mother worked in the building. She worked on like the 60th floor of the second tower that was hit, but she had evacuated. But I didn't know. Nobody knew that. This was on September 11th, 20 minutes after, like it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Like the shit is going down. So I just lost my emotions and I started to cry. I just started crying because I thought I was certain my mother was dead. And it was just like a shock and wave of emotion. And the kid started to laugh at me. And then I broke a chair over his head. So in a story.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So in a storytelling show, if I did that on This Is Not Happening, I would tell everything. And it'd be a 20 minute story.
Oh, absolutely.
And I would
draw
them in and it'd be interesting. And, and all that. In stand up, once you say 9/11, you better say something funny right away because the crowd is just going to be like, we don't want to think about that.
Right.
So
I
made choices like in my special, I made a choice. Just leave the 9/11, leave all
don't
that 9/11 shit
9/11.
Out. Just get to the, just say, I got into a fight in high school. Here's just the funny. Uh-huh. So I think with storytelling, you take that risk. If you just want to just start storytelling, you take that risk. If you say something controversial, people are going to be like, whoa.
Because sometimes then that tension, it's more satisfying when the punchline lands in
of
the
course.
Story because you have that like crazy tension of.
Yeah, and the audience isn't conditioned. They weren't conditioned. They weren't conditioned to hear a real thing about 9/11.
Right.
Unless it was the storytelling show.
Right.
Then they know. When I did the storytelling, I did Ari Shaffir's storytelling show at the Montreal Comedy Festival last summer.
Okay.
And when it was my time to go, I just said, listen, this is going to be this story is about my experience with 9/11. I just said that. And then I said something silly after, but I just told him, I was like, this is going to be about September 11th, but it's got a positive ending.
Okay.
So
you prep them for it.
I prep them. But if I did that, I guess I could do that in stand-up. I guess I could have, but, it's just like you make choices. You're telling a story, you just have to. I feel like that's what being a stand-up is. One of the biggest things, skills
what
you need
it?
As a stand-up
is
editing.
It?
Editing yourself.
Okay.
Cutting the fat. Like Dave Attell, when you heard that Skanks for the Memories and that travel bit, there's no fluff.
Yeah.
Everything he says is, I'm setting you up a punchline. It's like a boxer.
Crazy.
It's like a boxer is setting you up with jabs, because then the hook is coming and you're going to get knocked out. Like Muhammad Ali never threw a punch that he, Muhammad Ali a little bit. He was a little bit of a showboat, but like Floyd Mayweather never throws a punch without intention. He just does it. And that's like Dave Attell. Dave Attell's the Floyd Mayweather of comedy.
Okay, you heard it here first.
That's what it is.
Stand up with Chris Estefano.
Yeah,
truth.
Yeah. Cristela Alonso's a great storyteller and a great comedian, and I respect her because I have a Latina daughter. All right, Kyle Kinane, fucking white guy.
Chris, I added another white guy just for you this lineup.
Oh, no. I don't want any more whites. I hate the whites.
Someone said it. Okay.
God of thunder, Kyle Kinane.
Let's get into the next clip. Kyle Kinane, God of Thunder from Whiskey Icarus, his first album with Comedy Central.
All right.
I'm trying to be more tolerant, I'm trying. There's too many. Everybody's got their own thing going on. It's a waste of time to not be open-minded and learn these things. I'm trying to be tolerant, but it's difficult. That tolerance, it's tested routinely. I was on a flight going from Denver to Chicago, and halfway through my flight, midair, 35,000 feet, guy sitting next to me starts eating pancakes out of a bag. Not like a Ziploc bag with like a little seal and like a, hey, I meant to do this vibe. Like a bag from the store. Not a store that sold pancakes. See what I'm saying? Like a Foot Locker bag. They give me, they're just loose. They're just loose in there. Like bingo balls, just loose. And there's nothing wrong with what he was doing, morally speaking. But you gotta realize that if you do some wackadoo shit like eat pancakes out of a shoe store bag on an airplane, you're forcing strangers around you into a world of questions they never anticipated they would ever have to ask. First off, first off, all the questions, all of them. First off, every question. Why are you, why? How did you get to this point in your life? Where are you going? Because, like, that's not, how do you wind up, if you're on an airplane, you're on there with purpose. You're fighting gravity to travel through the sky to land on another part of the Earth's crust. Nobody's like waking up casually like Amelia Earhart, like, I think I'll take to the skies today. You have purpose. You have reason to fight nature, to go somewhere else. How do you have that purpose in your life, but still do it with hastily packed hobo snacks in your midst? That's not how you catch a plane. You're not like, is this one going southbound? Haven't seen Grapefruit Joe in a while. Drop in, we'll share some beans. That's not how you catch a plane. Usually getting to an airport, that's your number one priority in the day. I don't care what happens, I'm gonna get to that airport. I'll lose a hand, I'll fix it when I get there. Just get me to the airport. This guy was number 4 or 5 on his list. This guy was like, I know I got a flight, but it is Tuesday, and you know what happens on Tuesday? Silver dollar flappies. That's what happens. Tuesday is silver dollar flapjack day. A lot of people say, hey, how come you make the silver dollar ones? I make them that way. I don't make them full size. I make them smaller because I can eat more of them, and I get more of a sense of accomplishment. And so I like to do that. And that's a lot of batter over there, but I'll freeze it off. I don't have to eat them all, but I'll make them all, and I'll freeze them in Ziploc bags, and when I need them, I'll just have them ready. What time is it? Oh, shit, I gotta go! What's around? Well, I did buy some new shoes the other day. Foot Locker bag, shovel. Not Bindle, boxcar, airport. Woo, made it. And he got on the plane. He's on the plane, meaning he went through security. He went through an x-ray machine. His stuff went through. Pancakes got x-rayed that day. A TSA agent, somebody with a badge and responsibility, if they were fulfilling even a fiber of their requirements of keeping the skies safe, somebody had to at least just like mumble somebody. Is this a bag of pancakes? It is. Okay, yeah. Pancakes, yeah. Well, I've never dealt with it before either. I'm gonna say go ahead. I don't know. We might get an earful for this, but right now, bon voyage. That's what I'm gonna say.
That was Kyle Kinane from his album Whiskey Icarus.
Icarus.
You know, what is an Icarus?
Fly too close to the sun. Icarus.
Oh, an Icarus. Flew. God, he's so smart, Kyle.
I just told you that, though, so that makes me kind of smart.
No,
too.
Well, no, but we all, you're smart.
Thank you.
Of
okay.
course.
Just
absolutely.
Wanted to clarify.
You're smart.
That's one of my favorite
but, you know,
bits it's, from that album. The bag of pancakes is like the funniest thing.
Well,
I've
Kyle
ever
is like one
life.
Of those guys where it's just like, it's a laugh every 10 seconds.
Talk
Kyle's
about
another guy like David Tell.
Yeah.
And storytelling yeah. with punchlines. He's amazing yeah. at it, Kyle. And I love Kyle's because Kyle's one of those guys. When he says something, it's so funny, people start to laugh first and then and then clap.
Yeah.
That as here's another thing. It's just, I mean, I don't know what's going on. It's my CBD oil. And I started taking these new omega-3 fish oil pills.
Oh,
and it's just
I take
like,
fish oil.
Oh, sweet. What's your cholesterol?
Oh, I don't know.
Come on.
Seven?
Let's test it. Okay. I want to talk about your good cholesterol and bad cholesterol on next week's episode.
Okay, I'll
We're
test
it.
I'll test it first and then we'll
He, because he gets the laugh into the applause break. Like, when a comedian says something and it just gets an applause break, we don't like that because then it's like it wasn't funny. We just made some kind of statement.
Is that
it's
the
like,
clapter thing that wasn't Seth Meyers talked about that?
Well, clapter, but clapter is good. It's as long as the laugh's coming first. Like Kyle, everybody was laughing and then they were just laughing so much you started clapping because they're like that was so good. Whereas if it's just clapping, it's like go run for fucking office, go be a politician, we're at a comedy club,
right.
Stop telling
me
your points. You know, yeah we get it. Everyone's gonna clap. If you know
kinda,
you say
it's easy, right?
Yeah. If you like do a like, you know say something
deport Trump and then
yeah,
everyone
it's like
claps.
Everyone's gonna clap. Like right. Stop. So that's why I love Kyle because he's got it. Like he gets so many applause breaks and it's all the right way.
Yeah.
He's so funny. Sometimes it's hard to take with Kyle.
Yeah.
Every time I see Kyle Kinane at like a comedy festival in the city, he's always riding a bicycle around the city.
Really?
He's always either renting a bike or bringing his own bicycle.
It's because he lives in L.A., so he's
he's a bike rider.
Bike rider now.
Bike riding kid. I don't really know Kyle that well. See, here's the thing. Who you know is dependent on who was in your city when you were there.
When you came up.
So
yeah.
It's like when I came up, Kinane had already left New York.
Oh, okay.
Like Kyle.
Who'd
like
you come up with?
Like, who'd I come up with? My class, if you will. I guess you could say class is like who you did New Faces.
Sure,
just
yeah.
Just for
yeah.
Laughs, New Faces with.
Yeah.
My Just for Laughs class was, even though Michael Che didn't do just, that's the thing, like Che just skipped everything. I mean, it's like, what the fuck? We were all doing comedy for 10 minutes and this guy's on Weekend Update already.
Right.
But, and same thing with New Faces. He was in Montreal for the first time when we all were, his class, if you will, but he didn't do New Faces. He just went higher. But I started with Che.
Okay.
Pete Davidson.
Okay.
Brooks Whelan. Mark Normand. Sam Morrill.
Oh, I'm like piecing together the vibe.
Gerard Carmichael.
I like understand a lot more now.
Yeah. Kevin Barnett. Who else? Those are good ones.
Those are,
oh, Lil Esther. Esther.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Steinberg. Is her last name Steinberg? What's her last name?
I think it's
Pavitsky.
Just Esther. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lil Esther. She's great. And there's a big one that I'm just blanking on. Right. There's somebody else that was like, great.
Jerry Seinfeld.
Jerry Seinfeld is the other. But I mean, those, everybody there. Yeah.
That's
I mean,
a great.
Some SNL peeps.
Those people like really influenced your style, you think?
I don't know if they influenced my style.
Or you all just kind of.
We all just were in the open mics together.
Right.
Like
right.
We all just were there.
How long did you do open mics for before you started? I'm looking for some advice, Chris.
Well.
How long I got to do open mics for?
Well, the thing is, it's up to you. It's up. It's depending on how much. First of all, let me preface all of it by saying I'll still do an open mic.
Okay.
I mean, the greatest thing that ever happened to me, two great things happened to me that I think, well, I don't know if they're great, but two
birth
things that really
daughter.
Stuck out in my head. Well, three things. Let me tell you the three things that really, wait, what were you saying?
I said birth of your daughter.
Birth of my daughter when I just gave birth to her through my pseudopenis, like a hyena. That's an organ go Google hyena pseudopenises.
Hyenas give birth to the male?
It's a matrix. Listen, that's a whole nother podcast.
It's the capital of Utah.
Salt Lake City. I mean, it's layups. So I...
What are the three things?
The three things that really influenced me. Great. One, when Chris Mazzilli, the owner of Gotham Comedy Club, when I was at a Gotham comedy class when I first started in 2009, Chris Mazzilli told the class, only one of you... Out of all these 20, one of you will maybe be doing it in a year or two, and only one or two of you will hear this next piece of advice. All of you will hear it. It's only going to sink in for maybe one or two of you.
Mm.
And he said, if you need to treat stand-up comedy like you're a professional athlete. So, and the sport he picked, which was basketball, which was the sport that I grew up playing, so it really stuck with me. He was like, a professional athlete doesn't just show up on game day and think they can make free throws and make three-pointers and know the offense, defense.
Uh-huh.
All the work is put in when nobody's watching them. So people are going to watch you.
Yeah.
You know, by the time somebody sees you on TV, they just think you're coming up
right,
with it, but you're not. You've done all the other work.
Yeah,
so you're doing 40 open mics a week. You're writing,
editing,
you're bombing, you're doing all that.
Yeah.
So I really heard that
and
it stuck with me. So that's Mazzilli's one. Two, the other great thing that happened is I was doing open mics. Uh-huh. I was at Eastville Comedy Club, maybe 2 years into comedy, two okay. or 3 years into yeah, comedy, yeah. doing open mics, which I would, like I said, we New York yeah. scene, 30, 40 a week, that's just what we would do. All these guys that run around, Mark Norman, Sam, Michael Che used to do it, Mike Lawrence. I mean, it yeah. was just running to open mics. Like, that's just what we were doing, like fucking nut jobs. And we were at an open mic once at Eastville, five people there, like yeah. a Wednesday at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, where you have to pay $5.
Those.
Yeah, that's yeah. that's what it is in New York. That's yeah. why the New York scene, I think people typically say the stand-ups are better, which I know is debatable, but like comics will say, oh, you get really sharp in New York, is because uh-huh. when you go through the path of most resistance is here. Like
yes.
open micers, like what we have to deal with when we're doing open mics, I mean, the crowd is 10 comedians who hate you, who are not right. paying attention yeah. to you, who are worried about their own shit. So if you can make yeah, them yeah, laugh, yeah. you're good. Where yeah. other cities open mics is like a show. It's like on a Thursday at 8 o'clock and there's 100 right, people there. Right, so it's like right. everybody, they want to be positive. New York is like, no, everybody wants you to die.
Yeah, everyone so, hates you. Yeah.
So what happened was, though, I was at Eastville
uh-huh.
and 5 o'clock open mic, and Jim Gaffigan, who had was already four specials in, was already Jim Gaffigan, like already.
I think I saw Jim yeah. Gaffigan at Eastville also did a drop-in.
He dropped in open mic. Same.
Yeah.
Open mic, and he went there. And he went on stage, waited in line like everybody else, no ego, uh-huh. no nothing. What I took from that was like, this guy still, even with all his ticket sales and with all he's accomplished, he still comes back to an open mic to work on stuff.
Okay.
And that stuck with me. And that's why you said, oh, you know, when do you stop doing open mics? It's like, I never stop. Okay. I just always do them. Okay. I mean, listen, if I have a lot of shows,
yeah.
like real shows, like say I'm at the Comedy Cellar, if I'm doing five shows in one night,
yeah.
like now I'm privileged to do that, I would just use one of the shows as somewhat of an open mic in the
yeah,
sense like if
yeah.
I'm working on a few new bits, I'll throw them in the middle of one of those shows and treat it the same way.
Mm.
So that's great. That's just like awesome.
Yeah.
But if I don't have any shows, I'll go to an open mic. I'll fucking go to an open mic with you right now. I don't care. I love it. I don't care what people, I don't care. And you know, there's some idiots that like I didn't open mic 2 weeks ago. I forgot to tell you this.
Okay.
I did an open mic 2 weeks ago. It was at Otto's Shrunken Head. It was which is on Avenue
yeah.
B, I believe.
Yeah.
And it was on 3 o'clock in the afternoon. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Mike. I went and the host was like, brought me up. And then he was like, oh, Chris DiStefano, you know, because comedy, you know, comedians, you know, stand-ups, we all know what's going on with
yeah.
each other.
Yeah.
So he knew who I was. And he was like, oh, Jesus, you're here. He's like, Jesus, I guess your career went away. And it's like, no, you fucking dummy. You don't understand.
Right.
Like, you're never, with that attitude, you're not going to make it. Like,
yeah,
it was a complete,
yeah.
I was like, just, you can waste your time here.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to do comedy for open mics, you know, and you want to host these shows at Otto's Shrunken Head for your dumb open mics at two, and you want to fucking, it's cathartic for you, and you have a mental illness, and this is help, do it. You're not going to make it as a stand-up. I promise
right,
you that kid will never make it.
Yeah.
I just know, because he wasn't funny, and his jokes were, you know, stupid. But the third thing
yeah.
is
yeah, yeah.
when I those two things happened, and the third thing I saw was when I was with Artie Lang. I used to open up for Artie Lang like
oh,
6 years ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. He's the first guy that like took me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, something happened. He was headlining at Caroline's, all sold out shows, and then his opener, I forgot who it was, just couldn't make it one day, and mm-hmm. I was just there watching Artie Lang, and Louis Ferranda, the owner of Caroline's, like, Chris is going to open for you, and he was like, yeah, fine, whatever. So I opened, I wasn't supposed to, and I had a good enough set where Artie was like, I'm going to take you with me. So we like really bonded.
Wow.
Yeah, while Artie was clean. He was clean. He wasn't, he didn't have his relapse yet. Now he's in rehab and he's doing better. But that was like clean Artie, and I was like a part of it. It was like great. Like I would like pick his brain, and it was
That's
like
so cool.
vintage Artie Lang, like
yeah.
all together, all there, yeah. no drugs, just like giving me advice. And like people, I noticed like he would get mobbed wherever he goes. He gets fucking mobbed.
Yeah.
Because of the Howard Stern shit and just him being Artie. And he stops and takes pictures or gives everybody at least 5 seconds of his time, which is like, oh, that's pretty short. But it's like, it's not, because a lot of times that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not. He'll be like, oh, hi, how are you? Would you like a picture? Boom. Take
wow.
the picture, and then it's over. And then by then, 5-10 seconds have went by. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. But what he told me was, like, you give 5 seconds of your time to someone who notices your work and stops
yeah.
you in the street,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
they're a fan for life. No matter what,
yeah.
they're never
yeah,
going to
yeah,
turn
yeah,
on
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, where if you do the opposite,
yeah.
if you say, fuck it, I don't have 5 seconds to give you,
right.
you're going to lose them for life.
For life.
For
yeah,
life.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
doesn't
yeah.
matter what
yeah.
you do, because a common person will say, oh, I met that guy once. He was an uh-huh. asshole. Where on the flip side, if you're like, oh, I met that guy once, he was so nice, they're going to buy tickets right. to your show and buy your shit. So those are the three like things that
it's
had,
the likability
had
thing.
A major
Again.
Impact on my life. But now I'm selling out comedy clubs, so don't fucking talk to me.
Sells out, like sells one ticket.
Yeah, like, sells one ticket. I'm like, bye. Fuck all the advice.
It all just comes back to the likability thing. Like, just
that's it.
You just got to get people to like you.
I'm telling you, it's what it is. It's about, and that's just a life rule. Just be likable.
That's true.
It's a life. It's like there's no reason for you to be an asshole. If you're being an asshole, it's because your own ego and your own bullshit.
Right, right.
It's the same thing in stand-up. Yeah. Just if you're yelling at the crowd and you're like, you guys don't get me. Mm-hmm. These jokes are too cerebral. You're not smart enough. No, it's you, stupid.
Yeah.
It's the comedian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Don't blame it on the audience. You fucking dummy. You're an egotistical maniac. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, we all know who Chris
we
is talking
We all know who
about.
It is.
Those four clips all had something in common.
Okay,
let me
try to figure it out.
The theme of today's episode.
Let's guess the theme. Chris Radby had his bit Tanya.
Yes.
Cristello Alonso were flying with a Jewish boyfriend.
Yes.
Dave Attell was traveling.
This is
and
pretty.
Kyle Kinane's bit was God of Thunder.
I shouldn't give you the titles.
So the common theme here.
Pancakes.
Yeah, the common theme here, Tanya, flying with a Jewish boyfriend, travel, God of Thunder, Sky, Nate, flying.
Flying, there
flying,
you go.
Flying, Sky, in the sky, clouds, Chrissy Clouds.
Chrissy Clouds.
Chrissy in the clouds.
Second episode, staying up with Chris DiStefano.
And it was a doozy.
We crushed another one.
You can staying up with Chris DiStefano. We'll be here every week talking about stand-up. Listening to stand-up, inside stand-up.
Tips for stand-up.
Tips for stand-up.
I learned a lot this week. Thank you so much,
I learned
much,
a lot.
Chris.
We're going to do a live
night.
Episode from Nicole's childhood home.
Yes.
And it's going to be great. We're going to interview
Burbank,
your parents.
Burbank, California. Yes.
Burbank, California. We can find my script in the toilet.
That's good.
Thank you.
I get broken up with a lot. It's okay. Usually by text message. I said it was okay. Most recent time I got broken up with in a text message, I had terrible food poisoning, okay? So I was sitting at home dealing with my food poisoning, all right? So I was sitting on the toilet and my ankle buzzed. My ankle buzzed, man, was that's where my phone is, went to my pocket and my pants are down, all right? So like, I just don't want you to be confused going forward. So my ankle was shaking, all right? So I had to answer my ankle. Grab my ankle, grab my phone, flipped it open, because that liberal arts degree turned out real well. So I flipped open my phone and read the text message, and it said, I don't love you. I don't think I ever loved you. I don't think I could ever love you. It's over. What? Now I feel like I've lost everything. Because not only do I have terrible diarrhea, but a complete stranger just broke up with me. This is a raw number. I don't know who this is. But then I text her back like, babe, we can make this work, all right? Like, you just... believe in us. Who are you?
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.